Harihi Om Sahanavavatu Sahanaupunaktu Sahavilyankaravavahai Tejasvinavatitamastumavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai. Okay, so now Yudhishthira has answered Nahusha's questions. And so now he's asking Nahusha questions, right? Because Yudhishthira is very elevated. He can answer all these things. But now Nahusha, having been the emperor before, previously, and by the advice of the Brahmins, elevated himself to the heavenly regions. He is also very knowledgeable in, you know, how to perform duties as a king to elevate oneself. So Yudhishthira then asks, please instruct me, if you will, by what acts one can attain heaven. In my opinion, O Bharata, one can reach heaven by giving charity to Brahmins, by being kind and gentle in speech, by truthfulness, and by remaining non-envious towards all living entities. Right? So, yeah. So these are acts that by doing, you elevate yourself. Right? Because all these, that giving charity means you're gaining wealth, whatever it is, by your position. But you're sharing that with qualified people. Then being kind and gentle in speech means you always have to be considerate of others and not always angry because of, you know, what you're getting or not getting. Truthfulness, you know, then it has to be what's in connection with the absolute. What's that's truthfulness. By remaining non-envious means you're not trying to gain what they have beings and stuff like that. And all those things. Then you're envious of somebody. You want what they want to destroy things, but no, you just leave that alone. And so you just do your duties and that, and don't worry about, you know, others, whether what kind of benefit that they've gotten some benefit better than you. You just be happy with what you have. Okay, then Yudhishthira, which of these acts do you consider the best, and what constitutes non-envy? Each of these items can be considered superior or inferior depending upon circumstance. So each one, depending on where it is, that would be the prominent quality. So you can say, oh, which of these are best? Says, in different situations, each one of them is the best. Right? One must therefore understand life's ultimate goal in order to know how to act properly at all times. Right? So if I know what my ultimate goal is, then I know I'm trying to attain this. So in this situation, I would use this quality. In that situation, I'd use another quality. Like in this one, I might use charity. In this one, I might use gentle speech. And this one, I may use non-envy. Because I know what my ultimate goal is. But you say, oh, we have to get these qualities, but what's the ultimate goal? It's not to gain that quality. Quality is for use, right? Qualities then are applied. Application gets results. Results gets experience. We're looking for experience. So to have qualities, that's not the ultimate goal. It's to gain a particular experience is the ultimate goal. So what is that ultimate experience? Because if we see it's on the platform of the senses, you get somewhere with the sense, and the moment that the sense is not contacting the sense object, the experience is gone. It may remain in the memory, but you're not actually experiencing. Right? If you say it's relationships and the community and all that, then yes, you may get something, and then even when you're not, you can remember back on that and those emotions that'll come up, then you'll get something like that. But that's all gone with the end of the body. Next life, those are gone. So therefore, then the ultimate experience has to be something that's eternal. So that has to be, it's on the eternal platform in contact with the eternal. So that means we ourselves have to function on the platform of the soul, which is eternal. And the Lord is eternal. So that relationship between the living entity and the Lord, that will establish the eternal experience. Therefore, all situations, all qualities, all endeavors, all results should be always seen in the context of gaining that. That then becomes the beneficial position. Okay. One must therefore understand life's ultimate goal in order to know how to act properly at all times. This you have already explained, Yudhishthira. All acts and knowledge should be aimed at achieving the Supreme, right? So Nahusha, he's mentioned that, but now Nahusha has this knowledge. See, that's another thing. This is another approach that Yudhishthira is taking, is that before it may not have been, you know, you could have asked him some things, but now that he's heard about the absolute truth and has understood it, now then his knowledge of how to do one's duties as a king, as an emperor, then will be now in the context of the Supreme. And so now he can ask him questions. Now, even though Yudhishthira's taught him about the Supreme, but he's very experienced as an emperor, you know, and a king. And so now he can see how to perform my duties, because he's still a king. You know, I mean, you know, he's still in that position, he's still a Grihastha. And so how to perform those duties nicely in context with the Supreme, now he can ask Nahusha. Right, so Nahusha is then mentioning, you already answered this. Non-envy means always desiring the welfare and advancement of all beings rather than to exploit them for one's own pleasure. Right, so that's non-envy. Otherwise, you're trying to get everyone for that, you're actually envious of all creatures. You want to control them. So this idea to control everyone was, it means it's envious because you want to be able to get some benefit. In particular, one should desire the spiritual progress of others and act to assist them in that progress. Right, so whatever that position is, you're assisting in those aspects. Whatever it is that you can do, you don't get in the way of their development. Okay, then the next question. How does the soul accept a material body? Oh, Nahusha. The soul, or Atman, receives bodies according to its own behavior. Thus he transmigrates life after life, impelled by his sinful and pious acts, sometimes going to heaven and sometimes moving about in the body of an animal. Final liberation is attained when one comes to know Brahman, Supreme Absolute. Yeah, so by your karma you move through material bodies, but then by understanding the Supreme Absolute, then you give up and you move on from that. Right? In other words, I act materially, I get a material body. I act spiritually, I get a spiritual body. So then he accepts a material body because he accepts material endeavor for sense gratification. He gets a spiritual body because he endeavors to see everything in context of the Lord. Right? Yudhishthira nodded. The snake's answer were in accordance with what he had learned from the rishis. Clearly, Nahusha had deep spiritual realizations. How then had he become a snake? Nahusha replied, by sacrifice and asceticism, I became so powerful that I coursed through the heavens on a golden chariot. I became emperor of the wide earth, and even the Gandharvas, Yakshas, Rakshasas, and all the inhabitants of the three worlds, even the Rishis, paid me taxes. Such was my power that I withdrew the energy of anyone simply by looking at them. Then my pride overwhelmed me, and I lost my good sense. My knowledge became covered by the ignorance born of pride. Right? Because pride means this false ego. And here's where the problem comes up. Is now, I do an activity, right? Let's say I want to get a good result. That means I have to do a good activity. That means then to do that good activity, I have to have the proper knowledge and skill how to perform that activity. But for me to perform that activity, I have to have the identity that I will do that work. Right? So now false ego means I don't have the proper ego in how the proper identity in performing the work. Right? So therefore, so the living entity, he becomes proud and he thinks, I don't have to endeavor. I already am so perfect. I don't have to do this. I don't have to act well. I don't have to, I can do whatever I like. So, therefore, then, when you perform an action, it won't be correct because your position is not correct. Therefore, you see people that become proud, always fail. It's just a matter of time. Because as they go, they're a little proud and they'll make a mistake. But, you know, they're still from the past, there's still something, but the mistake will get bigger and bigger until they lose everything. So that's the whole thing. So that's why then, for those who are intelligent, they identify as servant of the Lord. Then, with that platform of identifying as the soul, not the body, they'll perform their activities in context of pleasing the Lord, by performing their duties to please the Lord. And then what duties they'll do, then according to what qualities their conditioned nature has. So that particular conditioning, you know, whatever it is, like we saw before, what are the qualities you have? And according to that, then you situate yourself in Varnashram. And so then, and that way, then you find what it is that you will use as the expression of your devotion to the Lord. And then that works perfectly. So materially, everything goes smoothly because you're following the laws of God, of laws of nature. And on the spiritual platform, because you're doing it to please the Lord. In other words, one is you're following the laws, the other is you're doing that to please the Lord. So the one gives the situation is nice, and the other gives it gives the consciousness and realization, the attitude. So that combination of proper consciousness and attitude with the proper understanding of the goal, that application, then you can take your situation and make it work. Because otherwise, I can have the best situation and know what to do, but if my attitude's wrong, I'll always get a wrong result. Because even if I get physically the result I was wanting, it won't give the experience I expected. Because a good experience only comes from proper consciousness, proper attitude. Then my pride overwhelmed me and I lost my good sense. My knowledge became covered by the ignorance born of pride. I ordered the Brahmin sages to draw my chariot and thus offended them. Right? So the knowledge is you don't offend Brahmins in that. But he thought, I'm so great that I can do whatever I want. So that's what happens. Pride makes you not see things clearly because pride means ignorance. So even though you have the knowledge and goodness and you have that drive and all that, but by being covered with ignorance, you'll apply it in a wrong way. One day, while in heaven, I touched the Gushyarichi with my foot. The sage cursed me, and I fell to earth, my body changing into that of a serpent. So, because he was dealing in this way, he was telling him to go quicker, because they were carrying the chariot, you know, that means the palanquin, and that. And they were going slowly, because the Gushyarichi is only this big. Right, and the others are bigger, so the palanquin's going kind of at a funny angle, and it can only go at the speed that Agastya is walking at. Not that Agastya can't go at the, you know, speed of mind or whatever he likes, but here, you know, he wants them to carry, and so he's carrying because he's in, you know, in the position of Indra. And so then he tells him to go quicker. You know, I guess he's kicked him or touched him with his foot, and he tells him sarpa, sarpa, which means go quicker, because sarp, you know, speed, they go fast. But you can also take the word sarpa to mean snake. So then, because he's offended the sages, then Augustus said, then you become a snake. And so that's how it is. In accordance with Augustus' words, however, you have now freed me from that curse. My discussion with you has reawakened my knowledge. I now realize that my real interest lies in cultivating brahminical qualities and spiritual knowledge, not in material status or opulence, right? Because material status and opulence, that's not the position. That by being absorbed in that, you get very distracted. Nahusha released Bhima, and the serpent body immediately died. From out of it, the two brothers saw a glowing celestial figure emerge wearing golden ornaments and beautiful garlands. He bowed before the Pandavas and then rose into the sky and disappeared. Yudhishthira and Bhima returned to the ashram and recounted the incident to the others. When Yudhishthira had finished, the Brahmins reprimanded the now sheepish Bhima for his rashness in having challenged the serpent and warned him not to be so foolish again. Right? Because, you know, it was that he was there and the snake saw him, but he was outside his distance to catch him. Right? Because basically he just came out of his cave and whatever came within that area, then that he could catch, that's he's taking it as his food, right? Because it's like he does his duty, and therefore whatever comes from that duty. So that midday, whatever comes within that rage, he can catch, that's his. So Bhima was standing outside of that. So he could have just kept walking, but Bhima, because he feels himself so powerful, he went close to the serpent, and the serpent caught him. So only by the grace of Yudhishthira and his perfect character and knowledge, then he was freed from that. So now the sages are admonishing him that don't be so foolish. Right? You see a big monster snake like that. That's not ordinary. Like the boars running at you. These are standard things, but you see a monster snake, like that that's not regular, you don't go over and bother it because you don't know what it is. Within days of their arrival at Vishakhayapa, the monsoons arrived. Right, because they had said that monsoons were coming, they wouldn't make it down to Kamyaka forest, where they wanted to stay. So then they decide they'll spend the rainy season in this forest with the sages there. Then after, then they'll move down, right? Because you see, they have a you know, within that year, so they've already taken some time. They stayed, you know, I think a month at Badri. Then they're coming down. They'll stay 4 months here. And this way, the time goes with the different sages. They set up their camp on high ground and watched as the rains fell and flooded the earth. Right, so you set up where you're going to be on high ground because if it rains, the water will sit there and then it'll go away. They could no longer see the sun. Bolts of lightning lit the forest while streams of frothing water rushed across the earth, hissing like flights of arrows. All the forest creatures became delighted and frolicked in the rain-soaked woods, right? Because then everything becomes cool and nice. Everything will grow very well. You know, there'll be plenty to eat and all that kind of thing. Gradually, the season turned to autumn. The clouds dispersed and the sky was lustrous. The days are warm and the nights cool because it still rains during the autumn season, but it's not constant everyday rain. It generally rains every few days. It's a very heavy rain, but it's less often. And so then it's another thing because now the sun comes out and then all the benefits there. So the days are warm, but nights are cool. The Pandavas surveyed the refreshed forest scenery and decided that it was auspicious time, the sacred month of Kartik, to return to Kamyaka. A few days after their arrival, Krishna and Satyabhama came to visit. Krishna knew they had returned to the Kamyaka by his inconceivable powers, right? Because he knows that he's sitting in their hearts, so he knows. So they decide, because in Kartik, then depending on what it is, then they can move around because it doesn't rain so often like that. A few days after their arrival, Krishna and Satyabhama came to visit, right? The Pandavas were overjoyed to see their well-wishing friend. With tears in their eyes, they rose up to greet him. Krishna got down from his chariot and bowed at Yudhishthira and Bhima's feet, as well as the feet of Domya and the Brahmins. He embraced Arjuna and accepted the twins' obeisances. Satyabhama embraced Draupadi, and when she and her husband were comfortably seated among the Pandavas, they all began to converse. Right? So first one's coming, and then there's, you know, greetings and all these and whatever is happening. Then after that, they all sit nicely, then they start to talk nicely. Arjuna told Krishna of everything that had transpired with him since their last meeting. He then inquired after Krishna and his family's welfare, asking specifically about his wife Subhadra and their son Abhimanyu. Right, because Subhadra is Arjuna's wife, but Krishna's sister, and she went back to, you know, stay with Balaram and be there. Krishna assured him that all was well. Turning to Yudhishthira, he said, "O king, the wise assert that righteousness is superior to winning kingdoms. And to cultivate righteousness, asceticism is necessary. In strict obedience to truth, you have performed your duties, and you have thus conquered both this world and the next. You are not addicted to sensual pleasures, nor do you act out of selfishness. Although you have won opulent kingdoms and been surrounded by luxury, you have not swerved from your practices of charity, truthfulness, asceticism, religion, forgiveness, and patience." Right? So the whole point is that having righteousness and having good qualities is superior to winning a kingdom or being, you know, emperor of the world. So that's why the Brahmins are superior to the kings. Even he's emperor of the world, still there are sages that are superior to them. You know, I mean, all Brahmins are respected by them, but to guide them in that, then these great sages and all that, they can give nice direction. So that's the superior. So Yudhishthira, by how he's been, you know, accepted these vows and gone to the forest for these 12 years, then the asceticism that he's accrued, it's enough for conquering this world and the next. Right? Well, Duryodhana has somehow or another conquered this world, but then, you know, by his piety, then all was lost. Yudhishthira bowed his head modestly as Krishna continued, "Who but you, O Dharmaraj, could have tolerated the outrage towards Draupadi, so very odious to virtue? There can be no doubt that you will recover your kingdom in due course. When your vow is fulfilled and the 13 years have passed, we shall do everything in our power to chastise the Kauravas. So then, you know, that's Krishna's discussion with Yudhishthira. And now we'll see, you know, what is his discussion with the other Pandavas. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai.